All right, welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Today, Andy Knopf is on the show, CIO. We get we have a lot of IT directors, IT managers, not always CIO. So you're kind of a big deal. That's pretty cool. And you do CIO stuff. And in your about section on your LinkedIn profile, you have extensive experience in modernizing infrastructure and transforming technology organizations. So that makes me want to ask, what's the oldest box of junk you've ever had to forklift? And what's some of the oldest stuff that you've seen? Because I like going back in time and talking about old technology that we used to work on with tape backups and, I don't know, you know, things spinning around in the background, like from old, 007 movies.
I'll give you a little bit of background. So the company that I'm with right now, I'm going to have my 34th anniversary here next month in May. So when I started, I got hired, right out of school. I was 21. We had one office and 85 people, and now we're 60 offices and 1,350 people. But when I started, I built my own computer, and I had a 1,200 baud modem. And they were so impressed at work because the fastest modem they had was a 300 baud modem. So if that doesn't date me, I don't know what does.
What if doth a baud? What I'm actually excited. This is the most excited I've been in a long time. 33 years, 11 months, yeah. Almost 34 years. Yeah. I mean, there's people out. I mean, I'm 48, so I mean, I'm just trying to think what was I doing 34 years ago? Okay, so you built a computer. What were you doing before you built a computer at work?
Well, this was at home. I had done. I was going to school. I was doing an internship, and I had kind of messed around with their computer stuff and. I worked for one of the oldest companies in the state of Wisconsin, and the company I'm working for right now, we were doing some of their helping them, subcontracting them, because my company, actually, our founder helped build the Hoover Dam. So our company goes back 125 years, but I work for a company that was 160 years old in Wisconsin.
AdTech.
So I was working at this company. I was digitizing their maps because they did dams. So I digitized their maps. It was called WVIC. And I was doing a little bit of their computer work for them. So the vice president of that company was talking to the vice president of this company. They're like, hey, we got this dude who's, really good at computers and we're only an office of 12 people. We can't afford to give him a full-time position. They just basically hired me on the spot.
So cool. This is how it worked back in the day.
It's all relationship. Ago. Yeah, all relationship. They didn't care about schooling, nothing else. They just wanted to. They needed an IT person. They didn't really have an IT. So I was really the company's first IT guy.
So I wish I had a good Wisconsin accent. If I could do a good Wisconsin accent, I would do it back in the day. It would be fun, if we could do that. You guys have something you say up there. I'm trying to think. What do you say in Wisconsin? There's something, I don't know. I just think of like, isn't there like ice fishing and stuff? What goes on up there? Is that like the grumpy old men?
Yeah, kind of grumpy territory? Old man. I mean, that's more Minneapolis,
I don't know geography. This is why you were taking paper maps and putting them into, some kind of computer files back in the day. That was a whole thing. When I was at CSU, I remember I had a buddy that he was a geologist, but I think his job or one of their jobs during college was just migrating maps to digital. I don't know what they were doing, but how they were doing it back then, probably archaic compared to now. This is so fun. So see, this is how everyone pretty much got started into technology that's of the age of, I don't know, maybe 38 years or older, because back in the day, technology was like, dude, we got computers now. We're doing stuff. Who knows? Right? It wasn't really a thought. Like in high school, I didn't really think about computer was a career. I just didn't think that. I was thinking everyone thought you become a doctor or a lawyer or engineer or I don't know, you're going to have to go do something else.
Well, it was crazy because, you know, I came from a blue collar family, and I bought a Commodore 64, you know, when I was 12 years old. I raised enough money, you know, because my parents are really against, you know, like, you know, computers, you know, not a thing. So I bought this.
How'd you raise the money first? I got to know how you raised the money.
Well, okay. So this is really a Wisconsin thing. So we grew ginseng. So we had ginseng gardens.
No
which
way.
Which was a very lucrative business. You could get $60, $70 a pound for ginseng. So when I was like 7 years old, I started working in ginseng garden, pulling weeds in these ginseng gardens. And I actually made pretty decent money just, you know, pulling weeds and working for different people in different ginseng gardens. So when I was 12, you know, a Commodore 64 was like $400 back then.
Yeah.
So I bought this and really got into it. And my dad just shook his head. He's like, you know, you buying a computer that was him and my brother would always make fun of me and said, yeah. You know, this computer thing will never, ever pan out for you. And then, so he always tells a story now. He's like, you know, I said this to, you know, to Andy, and I, you know, I apologize because, you know, he really showed me, you know, so
he was saying that to your brother. What was your brother's name?
Dan.
Hey, Dan, you loser. Look what yeah. Andy became. See, yeah. We were wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So he tells us a story. I know he tells my wife, you know, he stole a couple times, and she's like, yeah, yeah, I know you already told me that story already, but.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, they didn't have, like, you know, you couldn't go to school for what I'm doing, you know, back then.
Yeah, I mean, so you really have no advice to give. You're like, look, I was in the right place at the right time. I'm the CIO. That's how you become the CIO. Okay.
Yeah.
I go back in time, work in a ginseng garden, make some computers at home. That's how you become the CEO. That's the blueprint, everyone.
That's the blueprint, right? there's only one person probably in the world that ever had that, but you know, that ended up
don't leave your company for 34 years. Oh man. At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day. Okay, so even more fun then. So you've seen it all. You've seen...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everything.
So, I mean, this almost should be like the quintessential transformative show over the years, how IT has changed over the years. Okay, so they hired you. What do you come in day one and do? I want to know day one at, you know, I want to know, what did you do? What did you walk into?
All right. So this is kind of wild. So I had a mechanical design degree because I was really good at drafting stuff. So really the first day I start working on some detailed plans on a post office. So this is day one. I do that. And they're like, well, in your time, you can start looking at some of our computer stuff. And they had a computer room. There's two computers that both do drafting, a microstation.
What did you get hired for, though? Did you get hired for computers and drafting? Like, hey, we can't do all computers. We can't pay a guy just for computers because that's not a real thing yet. So we got to have you do something else at the same time.
Yeah. So, I mean, this company only had 9 computers total, you know, so there was only 9 computers here. There was a room that had 5 computers in it that was the bulk of wherever you went to the computer room, and there was 5 PCs in there, and then there was 4 other computers scattered throughout the company. We had an old IBM 36 for our accounting system with the green screens and everything. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, I don't know how much computer stuff we need. So I started doing some drafting. I did a little bit of drafting. And after the first week of doing a little bit of drafting, that was it. I doubled the amount of computers after the first month. I quadrupled the number of computers by the end of the summer. And you know, it just went off from there. So
So this is just a lesson in asking for money to the board, right? Because I'm assuming you had to go ask for money. I'm sure these things weren't cheap back then, because remember when like a hard drive was like $500 for like, you know, I don't know, 20K or something, who knows? So what did you say we needed? We need 20 more computers to do what?
Yeah. So, I mean, it was really the vice president that hired me was pretty instrumental in having this vision. They just didn't know how to execute it. So the money was there, but it wasn't buy-in with everybody. So when I start, there's still a lot of people on boards drafting. By the end of the summer, almost most of those boards went away. But the executive vice president at the time, this is famously what he came up to me and he's like, all this, what you're doing right now, you know, you're replacing all these boards with CAD, you know, stations, and they were $16,000 to do a CAD station back then. These weren't fancy. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want you to stop buying computers and I want you to go in the basement and bring those boards back up, because CADs, that's a fad. That's not going to last us here down the road. And I'm 21 years old and I'm like, oh man, no, I have to apologize. I think you're wrong. You know, I think CAD's here to stay, and you're definitely going to see some benefits of it. But he was serious that he did not want me to buy anymore. But again, I've been very lucky, very fortunate. All my time here, I've been given a lot of, you know, a lot of ability to do things. Like, we moved everything to the cloud before anybody was moving everything to the cloud. I mean, we switched to voice over IP phones before anybody else did it. I mean, we did Link, you know, which everything is Teams right now, or Zoom. Yeah, so we implemented Link back in the day, which turned into Skype, which turned into Teams. So we've always been a company at the forefront, and I've always done this stuff, you know, before anybody else did. I mean, that's how we, you know, everything that we've done, you know, it's like, well, we're going to get out there. We're going to be the first. We're going to get there before everybody else. And that's really been the model ever since the first day I started. And once I had that ability and that trust to, you know, buy what we needed, and we always got that payback, you know, always got that payback.
Who are you guys using for VoIP? RingCentral?
No, we had bought into Avaya back in the day.
Are you still on Avaya right now?
No, we're all Teams now. So
oh,
we had
oh good. Yay,
yeah. Yeah, no, back in 2000, this was back in
IP
2000.
Office or some box of cards.
Yeah.
In it, yeah.
Yeah, we went from an AT&T System 25 to this Avaya voice VoIP system.
I'm a phone geek.
Man, we had such problems. We actually, because Avaya was a company in England, so we had a guy fly over from England and stay with us for 5 weeks to try to get this thing. And we got to be really good friends. We were going out partying. This guy, man, he could drink, and he was a good guy. That was the only good thing about that whole circumstance, was he was really cool. But the system was too early to even do.
They had a ton of problems with their soft phones and stuff were kind of quirky.
They couldn't compact the technology. The voice couldn't compact and then unpack correctly, and it was just a nightmare.
The I love that you're on Teams. I helped a bunch of people do Teams migrations, obviously during COVID, which was like the quick press the Teams button. Everyone's got to be on Teams and just start voice enabling things through Microsoft. And that's not always that's just not the best way to do it. There's much smoother ways. But back to CAD boards, was there a learning curve? Were you training people how to use these? Were architects or whatever we call people that use CAD like annoyed? I mean, what was that like? That had to have been like an interesting moment for IT leadership to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough. You know, anybody coming out of college, engineers and stuff coming out of college, they didn't know how to use it at all. What was happening is like the tech schools, the true CAD people, you know, they'd come out of school and they knew AutoCAD and Bentley programs and what have you. So that no engineers were doing any CAD work at all. You know, you're hiring drafters that actually knew this. So there's a lot of younger people that were doing it. The people have been here a little bit longer. That was difficult. I mean, they had been on boards for 30 years, 35 years, and the last thing they wanted to do was have some, you know, kid come in and tell them now they got to start doing things on a computer because, mm-hmm. you know, they were drafting by hand all that time. And that was painful. I mean, there was a couple of people that, again, closer to retirement, within 5 years of retirement, and now you got to do something on a computer, and they've never touched a computer in life, and now this kid is putting a computer in front of them and said, start drafting. And they're like, mind blown. You know, it's a big change.
That's probably one of the toughest things that I think IT leadership has to deal with, which is teaching users, people with a soul, how to use technology. Do you think we're going through another wave of that right now with AI and stuff? Do you think that there's like this other layer of people that use technology in the past that's going to be lazy? I'm worried myself that I'm lazy and I'm not going to like catch on to this new curve of AI and applications and various different things that are being used right now.
Yeah, I mean, the AI thing is really, it's completely different. So my entire career, anything I've ever done with a computer, I equate it to being zero and one. All right. So zero mm-hmm. and one, everything is predictable. You know, I do something, I get this response. If I'm working on a server, fix the server, then I get this response. Mm-hmm. AI is not predictable. You do something today, you ask it something, you get this answer. 3 weeks down the road, you ask it the exact same thing and you get a completely different answer. Because it's evolving, it's learning, it's changing, and it's getting fueled by whatever's getting updated. So everything that we've known forever is like, here's the question and here's the result. And then that's the result. Now it's something completely different and it's changed. And even the people writing the AI engines, they can't even explain why all this is changing. It's self-learning. When that self-learning gets in there, It's a whole different game. So really for me and in my whole career, I've never seen anything like what AI is, and it's going fast. I just got back from a Gartner conference down in Miami, and the whole conference, every subject was AI. There was nothing else. Like cybersecurity, even though that's a huge thing, it was all about AI. Like nothing else matters. I'm like, how about, you know, what we're doing with our IT people and this, that, and the other? Nothing. It's all AI. And I've never seen anything like that. When you go to a conference, a CIO conference or IT conference, there's always all these subjects. There's always 8 or 9 things that you're learning about. Now it is just AI. It is insane how focused everybody is on this technology. And nobody wants to fall too far behind. You know, they want to make sure that if this person's doing it, I better be doing the same thing as that person is. Otherwise, I'm going to lose step, and I have to make sure that I keep up with the Joneses. And before, you know, it's like going to the cloud or switching to Teams or switching to Zoom or, you know, whatever that technology is, getting a new, you know, CD burner. You could maybe wait on some of that. But this is so much different. Nobody wants to fall too far behind. Everybody wants to keep up with everybody else. So it's a whole different vibe that's going on now that has ever gone in our industry.
So being someone that comes from a company that's always been fortunate enough to be kind of ahead of the curve and doing things before everybody else, any advice or thoughts on what to do there?
Well, I mean, it's tough because it's a money pit. AI can be a money pit. and I don't necessarily have the magic bullet, but you have to, you know, you have to do some experiment. You really got to understand the underbelly, you know, look like the OpenAI stuff, the Microsoft things. I mean, I've looked at everything. You can do a lot of the stuff on your own and it doesn't cost as much. You got to be careful because everybody's selling this technology. So there's 1,000 people and they're calling you every single day and they all got an answer. And it's like, this is, you're going to save so much time and money. You got to buy this. Be careful. Be careful where you step, because it's like security was a couple of years ago. Everybody sold security. You couldn't go anywhere without getting a phone call every single day about they were the best at selling security or they were the best at it. And truthfully speaking, there's only really a handful of companies out there that really do a good job on security. Like if you told me right now to pick, you know, 5 companies on security, I'd have a hard time with it. There's maybe only 3 that I could even recommend on security.
Let's do it. I want to know right now, and whoever you are, Greg Liddell, the Frenchman behind the scenes, who is my producer, let's go after these security guys and get them to pay us money for I don't know, giving them free advertising on the show. Let's go. Top 3. What are they?
Well, Microsoft, I think, by far has the best security.
Well, good. And we already got Microsoft. Good. So
and using Sentinel, I think it's a no-brainer.
People love them.
Yeah, no, just Sentinel. Sentinel One is different, but Sentinel One's a good company too. Azure Sentinel, I think, is number one out there.
Okay, what else?
I think a little bit more expensive, but I mean CrowdStrike. I mean they definitely have the track record out there. They're definitely out there. And I mean
that's 3. You got 3. Is there more? Yeah, You said there was only 3.
I think that was, you know, and they're all kind of similar. The Arctic Wolf, CrowdStrike, Sentinel One, they're all kind of in that same realm, you know. But I think Microsoft definitely distinguishes itself because, you know, when you're buying the package, you buy like an E5 package, you get so much of that, you know, for free as part of that package. So it's really hard to go to buy something else. It's like going out, you buy the Porsche. And then you go out and you get a Chevy Cavalier, you know, along with it. I'm like, well, I only need that Porsche, you know, so why am I buying another car?
Because I like the Chevy Cavalier guy. Yeah, that's why. Yeah. We got to say that if you're from Massachusetts, I would have a Cavalier Porsche.
But so I'm a big Microsoft guy. I've always been a big Microsoft guy, and I mean their systems. You know, we've been lucky. We haven't had any problems. But and it's what's nice as a CIO, a lot of times I'm not getting into the grind where I'm getting down and have to figure out all this stuff. I can go and see my dashboard and I know exactly what's coming down the pipeline. I can see all the bad stuff that's happening anytime. I mean, I can pull up right now and go, oh yeah, okay, here's Russia coming in, here's North Korea coming in. I mean, you see all that real time and I don't need any extra training to see that stuff. And, you know, we got our gate up and hopefully we're blocking it every single day.
Microsoft Sentinel, CrowdStrike. Okay. Yeah. I'm giving you one more if you really want. If you think there's any other weird AI ones that are coming out that are going to make everyone's life better.
No, I mean Microsoft's starting to put some AI technology in. It's pretty fantastic, you know. So the adaptive learning inside Microsoft, you know, hopefully they're going to stop that. So really nobody's going to have to do anything.
Is there any type of AI type of stuff that you guys have implemented that has been helpful beyond the use ChatGPT?
I do like the Microsoft Copilot. You know, we're starting to use that quite a bit. I've been using it a lot. Like every single day I'm using AI. So I did some presentations already with it. I've done some Excel things with it. It's getting better every single day. Outlook, I don't use Outlook without doing AI. It helps me write all my emails, all my responses back.
Really?
Oh yeah. So you get an email and somebody asking for a meeting request. It'll come in, it'll automatically generate a meeting request, and then you can have like a draft email back. So it's very powerful. In Word, I can't write anything now without using AI. I mean, I just can't. Everything I have is AI. That description on LinkedIn, that's I had the basis for it. I had AI make it better.
Excellent. Oh, you mean the about. As Chief Information Officer, Andy Knopf has an extensive experience modernizing infrastructure and transforming technology organizations. He uses AI to write everything. He excels at building diverse, high-performing teams.
Right? I mean, you know, anybody who knows me, I'm no wordsmith. You know, so I mean, for me, AI is really helped me out. So I can sound a lot smarter. You know, I can do anything. But writing has never been really my forte.
Team building. How many guys do you have on your team?
We have 22 people right now.
That is significant. That is significant. Again, the blueprint for becoming the CIO, having a great team, is being in the right place at the right time, going back in time, having spent money using ginseng, selling ginseng to buy your first VIC-80. What was it? What do you got? You had Commodore
64, yeah.
Commodore 64. Yes, and then having 22 people on your team. Is there any leadership tips you have for anyone out there? Or I don't know. That's a big team.
Yeah, no, it's a big team. You know, so I'm very proud of the fact that I've had people stick with me throughout my career. So the first person I ever hired is still working for me. So
How many years?
32 years he's been working for me. And the interesting part about it is his son works in the department now too.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, like, it's a no-brainer. The dad has just been a rock of this company, you know, forever. And his son it's the same thing. I'm like, your kid wants to do this? He used to be on the workbench. You know, when he was 8 years old, he'd come wait for his dad to get off of work, and he'd be playing with computers and playing with hard drives and taking part on the back bench back in the day. And I'm like, someday that kid's going to want to be in IT. And sure, you know, we got him in the department. But you know, the whole thing about being a great leader, you just
that's like
be...
the American dream. Just like, sure, that's like the old school American. Like, I thought we got away. I thought we got away from that, but that's still clearly very well alive there at your company. That's just the old school American dream. I don't know what you call that. Like the same, like, go to the company, work. I've been there for 33 years. I may have spoke with one other person that's been at a company that long.
Yeah. I mean, leadership is all about making sure that you're taking care of your team. You know, I mean, and I can teach anybody anything, but I can't teach anybody to be a good person. You know, I can't teach that. And I can't teach communication to people. You either can communicate and you're either a good person or you're not. And if you have a bad person who's technically really smart, which I've had some of those people work for me,
yeah,
it makes it a whole lot worse. So I had some incredibly smart people that were just, and that you just can't have that. So I'll take anybody over somebody just being mean or just can't fit in with everybody else. Our group right now, and it's taken years and years and years. That's the hardest part of my job. Anything on the computer side, that's always been the easiest. The hard part is making sure that you're a good boss, that you listen, you're compassionate, you have all that. And you interject help when help is needed, and you got to know when to back off. You know,
Give me a couple examples of this, because human psychology and human interworkings they're just difficult, you know, like, yeah. How do you know when to help in some situations maybe that are helpful? I do think you can. I do think you can teach to communicate, by the way. You can teach, like, ask probing questions, you know, show empathy. I'm saying you have to be an empathetic person, like you're saying, deep down in your soul to begin with. I get that. But I think you can teach, like, young people, like, how to talk with people.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent. Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, but there's just, you can kind of see really actually within that just a couple, you know, like an hour or less with somebody, you can kind of tell what you're going to have. You know, I feel like you can really tell. I've gotten really good at doing interviews now and talking to people and really know within an hour if you know, what that person's going to be like the rest of their career here. I know that's
fire off some interview questions. Interview me. I want to know. Let's just do this. I've never done this. I kind of know what an interview would be like. Would I get hired or not? Probably not.
You know, a lot of it's just having a talk like we're having a talk right now. You know, it really is. It's just getting down.
Phil, we'd get nothing done with you there. We'd be talking about old stuff. You'd be just talking too much. You're not hired.
Yeah, but that's really what it's about. It's how you communicate. It's how you can, if you can't even come up with something, if you can't come up with a story, tell me about something that happened in your life. And then, you know, be able to tell that back to me. You know, and a lot of times interview questions, they don't want to know, you know, something on the back. So you phrase it.
Yeah, Jason and Gilpatrick and I, we mixed some oil and gasoline together on our bikes. This lady shortchanged us on a job we did. So we poured this gasoline down on in front of her driveway around the house, lit that thing on fire, went about a foot in the air. We were really scared. We thought we were going to get arrested. So we rode our bikes off into the woods, bit our teeth all night long and thought we were going to get arrested. And nothing ever happened. So there you go, story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it really, the two biggest questions is, I mean, you just try to figure out where their baseline is, you know, what kind of hardware knowledge do they have? What kind of software knowledge do they have? I mean, just really basic things.
And have if you ever they, hired they someone have, with little to no knowledge and trained them because they're just such a good person?
Yep.
And did they end up doing well?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very much so. In fact, I typically only hire interns now. And interns will get done with school and then they come into the system. I don't believe in putting in, I've had a lot of problems with putting in people at higher levels because it actually does not motivate the people who have been here for a while. So it's a lot better just to get interns and have them work through the system. You have everybody else in place that can help them grow and then hopefully get them into higher positions along the way. That's probably the best advice I give to everybody. If you hire a lot of senior managers, if you do have help desk people or people have been here for a long time and they see you hire senior people, they're like, well, what the hell? You know, I just got knocked down a peg because now there's a senior person here and that's less of a chance for me to grow up through the system. So
it's true.
You give people the opportunity.
And then the new guy, like they all hate him too. So they're all throwing darts at him with their eyes too. So now even the new guy doesn't even have a chance to do well either. I've been in that position before. I've been in a position where I've come into a place, moved to a new market. This is back when I did work in corporate America, been given a big position. And there was another person below that was like, what the hell? Why didn't I get that position? And then, so now I did fine. I did okay. I did well. But it still was uncomfortable for a while. And, you know, why didn't someone else below get that? That's a great philosophy.
So what I found, and I don't know if it's the formula or not, but I haven't lost anybody in the last 4 years, which is really unusual to keep people that long in IT, you know, departments. But if you keep on doing this, it you know, like I said, it does pay dividends. You're giving people a chance and that's how they grow. Most people want to stay at the same company, but if there's no growth, there's no chance of advancement, they're going to go someplace else. It's usually not because their boss sucks. And sometimes that is your boss sucks or you're not getting paid enough. They want to be appreciated and they want to have a chance to grow and they want to get better and they want to stay in that company and they want to grow. I firmly believe that's what most people want to do. Now there's people out there who just want to go for the money and everything else, but like the people that are here, they grow and it really is a family atmosphere. I come in here and I mean it really is that family atmosphere and everybody appreciates that.
Sounds like fun, man. You're making me want to go work there, but I don't. Well, the problem is I don't like work.
Well, that's a problem.
No. Okay, cool. We must go back in time again because I'm fascinated with the fact that you've been there for 33 years. I need to know, what was the biggest project you guys ever did? What was the biggest forklift, crazy, insane IT project you've ever done?
Oh man, I mean there's been so many. I mean, when I came here, there wasn't even a network here. You know, I mean, there was no.
So, what network. Were you guys doing? Were they cabling? Like, hey, we got to go buy these boxes of cable. Were you guys cabling yourselves, or like?
What? Yeah, there was nothing here. So, I mean, it was Sneakernet. You take floppy to floppy. The first network, because they didn't want to spend more money on a network, we started out with a serial parallel network. So you could send files back and forth on the serial network with a flat ribbon cable. Yep. And it was 38.4K on a serial. If you went on the parallel port, you can get 115K. And then they doubled it to 230K between computers. So, I mean, in 92...
What were you sending? Like a document?
Yeah, documents and CAD files. Over
How long would a CAD file take over that? It would take forever.
It took a long time. But that's what we did. And then in 92, I bought a Novell network. So we actually put in our first network and, you know, had a 1 gig drive. It was $7,000 for a 1 gig drive. And I bought this Novell network and, you know, just went, you know, just started adding more space to it. And it lasted a year.
That must have been so exciting. It must have just been so fun. It sounds like a fun job.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, everything I did, everything was new that we did, you know. So, I mean, you know, Novell network, then Windows came around. So then we put an NT 3.5 network and did that. And then, you know, the internet just was starting. I mean, I was the first one to have an email address at a company. So we had DaVinci email and, you know, we had an email address. And I mean, I got emails that go back to 97 that it's in my Outlook yet. You know, and then, you know, like I said, you had voice over IP phones, and then, you know, going to the cloud, man, the cloud thing, that was probably the biggest project, you know, because I mean, that was monumental, because it's been over 10 years. We decided as a company, we would move 100% of our data to the cloud. And this is before anybody was really moving a lot of stuff to the cloud. And I mean, it was rough. You know, we were told it was going to work a whole lot better than what it was. And there was a company called Panzera. We're still using them today. But, you know, after we bought it, there was hundreds of other companies that bought that same technology. You know, well, Mead and Hunt is doing it. You know, I think it'll work for us. And a lot of people bought that technology. But it took a long time to get it figured out. And then a couple of years ago, you know, we were one of the same customers that went over to the virtual desktop. So we've been doing virtual desktops for a lot of years right now. We still use a lot of virtual desktops. So they're on AVD on the Microsoft platform. And that was a big project. And that continues to be a big thing for us. When COVID hit, you know, nobody could figure out all the stuff we're doing, all this cloud stuff. They kind of knew about it. And, you know, it seemed like it made sense, but nobody really understood it completely. So COVID hits, you send everybody home. And I said, we're going to have on a Friday, we sent everybody home. It was like March 13th, whatever it was, 2000. Like 2 days later, you know, on that Monday, we converted everybody over a weekend to cloud desktops. We did all of our engineering, all of our CAD systems over a weekend. That next Monday, everybody thought they were watching Netflix and they were just going to wait for IT to catch up with what was going on. Two days, we converted everybody and had everybody working. There was no downtime. And then within the first, you know, the first 2 weeks, our productivity went up. Well, productivity went up because nobody else had anything else to do, but we had the systems in place. After 5 weeks, productivity went up, you know, 8%. Our best year on record for a 125-year-old company, our best year ever was that COVID year. And that's crazy. People didn't have expenses and everything else, but we had all that stuff in place. We were ready to go. We had that toolbox. We had everything in that toolbox, but not everybody was using everything in the toolbox. We had everything ready to go. I never thought it was going to be a pandemic, but we had it. We had it all. It was all ready to go. And then this happened. Then we had some things that happened. You remember the fires in California? We had an office almost burned down and people had to be at home. We had that. We had the hurricanes. It was, you know, a couple of years ago, we had hurricanes. And then we had small areas that we were able to test this and it worked out well. But we didn't have that big global event happen. And that global event happened and boom, we had it nailed. We didn't have to worry.
Productivity went up. What happened after COVID? Did you guys go back to the office?
No, and that's kind of the problem. I mean, you know, it worked out so good when you worked at home. It was hard to get people back in the office. And we still struggle with that today. And a lot of people are struggling with that. But
why
you
do
know,
people even worry about it is what I want to know. If your productivity went up, why bother?
So they're fundamentally, there's something about being around other people that you can't do at home. Now, if you're a senior person, 25, 30 years, and you've seen it, been there, done it, whatever, you know, you can maybe survive at home and you'd be fine. The problem is when a person's here a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, they need other people around them and they need some senior people to help them. And you can't do it over Teams or Zoom or whatever. You just can't do that. You have to be able to communicate and talk to people, and they want to have that interaction. I mean, I got a group of people here and they interact. They need that interaction. And I think developing, I don't want to get too deep on developing mind, whatever like that. You need that interaction with people. And you know, I just think that that's very important. And if everybody's just working at home, then who cares where you work? You know, who cares? And you're just collecting a paycheck, you know, and some people, and they're cool with that. But man, it's nice to come, like today, came into work and you're going around and you're talking to people that you wouldn't have talked to on a Zoom call, but you can walk around and you can say hi, you can find out some things. Hey, what happened? Did you go on vacation? What'd you do over spring break? You know, you're not having those calls on Teams and Zoom. You can only do that when you're just walking around and you can sit down and say, "Hey, Jim, how's it going?" Or, "Hey, Jill, what's happening? Let's have a conversation." So it's I think that's important. And to me, it would really suck if everybody is just working at home, because then it's going to be like, you ever see the movie Ready the Player Matrix? One?
Oh, what was it? What was the movie?
Ready Player One?
No.
Really, check it out. You got to see this movie. Everybody is in a headset, and they're in bedrooms and they're at home, and everybody, their entire life is inside goggles, and they don't know anything else. And it's a super good movie, and I could see that happening at some point if we're, and I'm like, yeah, man, this movie's kind of foreshadowing here.
Yeah.
I think it's a balance. And I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just as much to blame as anybody. It takes me 40, 45 minutes with traffic to get to work. And I'm like, man, it's just nice to get out of bed and go down and start working. And I'm more productive working at home. But then, you know, what kind of messages am I sending when I'm not here? And when somebody needs something, that they can just come to my office and talk. And it might not be about what's happening in the world of computers and what's breaking. Maybe it's like, hey, I'm having some problems at home and, you know, something's happening with my parents and I just need somebody to talk to. And they feel a lot more comfortable coming and sitting down and talking to me in person than they are going to do calling me up on Teams and saying, hey, I got this problem with my parents, you know? So I think that's important. And we're going to lose that if we're not careful.
It's true. My AI team was building a training program for the podcast and stuff. And I have an AI team that's in Morocco. And so I went over, I'd never been. So I flew over and we built the training program over a 2-week period, like rented a villa. It had like a pool outside. It had, you know, like it was just the whole experience was amazing. But the whole interaction of sitting down and working together, just the firing ideas back and forth and editing things quickly and going through things like that was very powerful. And I can see how it's less not having that every day, which makes me want to, I'm probably going to just build a bigger office there so that we can have all kinds of people collaborating. Just that collaborative kind of roundtabling and stuff like that at least was very, very effective from that standpoint. But yes, all the other things in general too, just general human interaction and empathy for one another and really understanding that we're all humans walking around with goggles on, sitting in our rooms in the Matrix.
Scary to think of that.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime. due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
I don't really know where to go from here. I'm gonna leave this up to you. What's the transition? What's the future look like? I know, that's a better idea. So for someone that's been at the same company for 34 years, you probably have some sort of end game. But what's everyone else gonna do in the world that doesn't have hasn't been in the same company for 34 years? What's the end game for? What do you do for these people that are coming into IT now that didn't have the advantage of they just didn't have that advantage of picking ginseng and working on a Commodore, that is just such an advantage. I don't even know where to go from there. But what do those people do now that actually grew up with technology? What's their end game? What do you see the future? What's the future landscape of technology? Because it's really weird to me that from the, let's give it the 70s, maybe 69, I guess we landed a man on the moon back then. If you believe that, so from the early 70s on, so much has changed. What's going to happen now? What's the end game for people? Is there a retirement plan? I don't think people believe in Social Security anymore, and 401k maybe. I don't know. What do people do? What's the end game for people?
You mean like after they get done with their career or starting their
career? Yeah. What do you think? Yeah. What is it? Is there a career anymore? Is it a life game? What is it? It's kind of a deep question. What are you going to do?
Man, I still think
off into the sunset, or
I still think it exists, and I actually think it depends on how you're brought up too. I mean, my dad was he was a truck driver. He got brought into a factory because he needed him to do things inside this factory, and he didn't want to do it, but he got convinced to do it, and he ended up running this factory and had 1,800 people working for him, and he barely finished high school. He was driving gas truck across state lines in violation when he was 16 years old between Wisconsin and Minnesota. And I mean, this guy was in charge of running one of the biggest cheese packaging plants in the world. And he started all very humble beginnings. And I looked at that and I looked up to him. I'm like, man, that's what I want to do. I want to be at one company my entire life, like my dad was. That was my goal. I didn't care about anything else. That's what I wanted. I wanted to find a company that was going to be able to do that. And when I started at my company, I had three interviews. I had this interview, which was kind of in the bag, but I had these two other ones. And I got paid the least amount of money at this company. I started at this company making $9.09 an hour. And I had another company.
Almost 10 bucks, though. That's almost 10 bucks an hour.
That's like $9.09. I don't know. It all sticks in my mind because it was $9.09. But I had another company that was like 11 bucks, and another one was $10.50. And I took this one. And, I asked, I'm like, so, what's the highest position I could have in this company? Come on, let's go. They have a 4-year degree and a 2-year degree. So what's the highest position I could ever have in this company? And you're like, well, you can be president of the company someday. I'm like, cool. All right. So that means that my ceiling is high. And I'm like, okay, I know that we're company and our employee owned, can I be a stockholder by not having 40-degree like that? Will that preclude me from being a stockholder? And like, no, anybody can be a stockholder. Although at the time, you know, it was pretty much all the, you know, the 4-year degree people that would have it, but they're like, no, anybody can have that. I'm like, cool, that's great, you know. And then, you know, and they're like, you know, you do your job, and you're gonna have, you can be here just your entire career here. And I mean, that really convinced me, because at that time I was looking at, I wanted to be part of something bigger. I didn't just want to work for a company. I wanted to have some ownership. I wanted some stock in it. So if I worked really hard, that I knew that I was working hard for myself, but I was also working hard for the company. And if I put a lot more into it, that I'm going to have that payoff. So now fast forward, here I am today. I'm CIO of the company. I'm the second largest owner in my company. So that what I was told when I was 21 years old looking for a job, that's still there today. And now my biggest thing that I do in my department, now how I'm successful in my department, is that I have to make, you know, partners or make everybody stockholders and understand that ownership in this company makes sense. We've been around for 125 years. We're going to be around for another 125 years. That thing that was in place when I started is still here today. So I press upon people that everything that I did, you could do the exact same thing. And people, it takes a while, you know. You got to get into the fabric of it, but that dream is still there, you know. Especially in this company, that dream is still there, and I hope it's still there. Like I said, 125 years from now, so it still exists. That dream isn't completely, you know, lost, I don't think. Although you turn on the news and you see a lot of bad things, there is still pockets of companies that operate that way, and you just have to find it, and you can't necessarily chase the, you know, the pot of gold. You're not going to make all your money overnight. There is no way that you can just go and be driving a Porsche, you know, and hover, you know, a year after you're working someplace. It just doesn't exist. It takes hard work. Yeah, it's hard work. It takes time, but eventually, you know, if you're working for the right company, it's going to pay your dividends. But like you said, you know, there's a lot of people that don't want to contribute to a 401k. They don't want to contribute because it's all down the road. So you have to, I think you still have to look at the long game, and it's very, very difficult to look at the long game anymore because everything is so fast and it's all instant gratification.
What you just said is actually really deep, and I think could be analyzed on a very deep level as far as how companies should be structured. It's actually very, very deep. To you, you just said it because that's just what you did, but it's actually very, very deep. I really appreciate what you said. I think it's quite mind-blowing. It sounds simple. From your standpoint, it probably sounds simple, but it's really not. I think it was really good advice. I think it's an excellent story. I don't really even want to add anything else onto that. I think we have to stop the show here because it was that great. And I just want to say thank you so much for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. That was outstanding.
Cool. Yeah, it's awesome, man.